Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a CatSource production. In this episode, we discuss the how. This episode is brought to you by the CatSource brand podcast. Podcast is your podcast production team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story through audio? That's what we do. Podcast strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at Podcast, we exist to help you create and share amazing content through podcasts. Learn more by visiting podcast.com. Our guest today is Charles Likewise. Charles is a managing director of Experts in How, LLC. As Charles says, the why and the what are critical for success. The how validates and aligns those two elements to create sustainable, profitable growth. Charles, we hear a lot about why, think Simon Sinek. We hear a lot about what, like, what do you do? But the how we don't seem to hear about as much. How did you become fascinated with the how?
It's interesting. Simon Sinek's golden target, if you will, has how, what, and why, which are the three critical questions for business. I focus on the how because I think it's the most important that aligns and validates what and why. Having said that, though, they are truly iterative in terms of their relationship to one another, how, what, and why. But what I find in terms of the lower middle market of companies out there that need help with growing, that typically they need help with how to construct the what or how to deliver the why. So those are kind of the where it seems to be an opportunity to be most helpful for these businesses to grow in a way that is sustainable and profitable for that matter.
Well, that makes sense. But the how is, I guess when I'm having conversations with people and I kind of go back to my original thought, is that's what's the what and the why are talked about. The why and the what is what's talked about. Why do you think though that we don't get into the how to do something, how we, you know, work through these different processes, which, you know, we're going to dive deeper into that. Is it because it's just, you know, more glamorous to talk about the why and it's more, we're talking passion now, we're talking about digging deep into your soul, like what you really want to do. Like, why is that? Why is the how not as talked about?
Well, I think you hit one of the nails on the head. Why is an emotional connection? It's the emotional connection that you want to have with your customers, whether it's B2B or B2C. So I think that's, people are constantly looking for something to create passion and invoke a response to connect with their customers. The thing is, connecting with your customers includes all the way through to delivery. And I think honestly, what happens is people don't know that much about how. So when you don't know much about something, you typically don't address it as much as you need to.
That's right. And what I like about it is, I mean, you've been in this business. I mean, you've been in the business for a long time, but this specific company that you're running now, it's been a short amount of time, but you saw an open market. You saw everybody talking about the why and the what, and mostly the why, obviously. And you saw an opportunity. So regardless of what it is that you're talking about, if we're looking at another person who's got an idea for a business, an entrepreneur, someone wants to start something, it is finding, right, I think I have a book over there possibly, the blue ocean ship, you know, get to the blue waters. You know, if we just want to go talk about another why, well, I could go read Simon Sinek's book on why, or I can find countless videos or books to read about that. It's opening and going to that market that's got openness to it, right? But you have to get there somehow. So take me back a little bit down this, you know, maybe back when you were a kid, were you always like trying to figure out how things worked? I mean, does it go back that far when you're a child in, you know, Detroit or Chicago?
You know, I don't know if it was, I'm not the person that took apart the light switch and tried to put it back together and electrocuted myself. So it wasn't that extreme. I just thought about in terms of understanding what the objective was of something I wanted to do, even as subjectively as a kid, because we don't really plan out things that detailed.
Right.
And as I think about where did I want to go or what did I want to get done, the how naturally fell out is figuring out the path to get there and to be successful with it. And by the way, you know, you make mistakes along the way, so you're not always successful with the how initially. And when you determine the why, it kind of sits there statically. And even in terms of the what being the strategy, it should be relatively static. How can change all the time. And it's more of a challenge in terms of the dynamics of what's affecting you or what you're affecting to actually get to the goal.
Did you have influences that, was it books or people or teachers along the way that your curiosity was heightened as a result of reading or being around these people?
I think there have been some teachers. In my case, I happen to have had parochial school upbringing. So when people talked about getting things done, they talked about it in terms of a structure more than maybe not that kind of training. My dad as well, he was a doer, if you will, and a teacher. So a different combination of people. And so I think I learned more from him and watching him and how he tried to go about getting things done.
And teacher, like teacher in school?
He was, yeah. He actually had a doctorate degree in languages. So he taught Latin and Greek, and then okay. He taught math, and most of which was Greek to me. But the reality is he was a teacher and somewhat creative, but he had a structured approach given the discipline of those backgrounds. So, and when you think about languages and how it's built and its structure and how it informs, you know,
especially those two languages,
yeah,
right? So,
exactly.
So you're going back to what other languages are or other words come from.
Exactly.
So you're getting into, okay, well, this is how it started, and we're going to go through this process of how did this word come to be? And I'm like, oh, it's, you know, Latin.
And interesting that connectivity on going from, you know, the root to getting something done is really what probably is the seed that put me on this path.
It has to be. Yeah. See, we love that stuff. There's always some way, you know, my mom's an artist, and I can't paint a picture. I could, but it's not going to be any good. There's certain things that I can't do and creatively, but I feel like there's other ways we can create. You know, we look at ourselves as entrepreneurial artists, you know, so I can take a blank piece of paper and we can come up with a strategy, an idea, and put design and graphic design and do a podcast and, you know, write a blog post. And I think that's creating. But there's, so you go back in time, you're like, well, my grandmother was an artist. So it's like the seeds, like you're saying, with your father were planted, and you don't necessarily like realize it right then and there. But when you think back, you're like, yeah, you know what? There's connections there. And I think any founder, entrepreneur, visionary that we run into has these little things along the way that get them to where they are today. And it's a lot of fun to see it. And it's a lot of fun to work with people who have that, because they have that passion. They have that depth to them.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. When I think of entrepreneurial spirit, it does start with a passion for whatever that may be. And in my case, you know, what gets me up in the morning is helping people and wanting to help people. And again, getting back to what, why, and how, the how area is the most unserved part of it that actually helps people be successful. So to me, that's where my passion kind of flows.
We see it. Because we see a lot of, you know, when you have a marketing business and we create a lot, you can bring in a lot of people that are passionate about those things, right? And that's great. So I think, like you said, you have to have that. But then it comes into this, well, how are you going to do it? How are you going to go through? You can be as passionate. I've seen very passionate people and can't do anything with that. How do you do the next thing? What is your process? What's the strategy behind it? Where are we going with this thing? And when that happens, then what do we do? And then when it doesn't work, how are we going to fix it? You know, there's so many things that I sometimes say, oh, I'm so super passionate about it. It's fantastic. You can be great. You can be very positive. And we love that. It's better than being negative. But how are you going to go through that process? Obviously, you wrote a book, Power, Respect, and Business. But, you know, in order to write a book, in order to have the knowledge that you have, obviously you're surrounded by a lot of amazing people, and you have something going on in your head that's allowed you to get to where you are. I love talking to other successful people that like to help, to see like, what are the types of books that they read? And then sometimes something will catch my attention and say, ooh, I want to learn more about that. So you dive into that rabbit hole of, oh, I never even heard of that author. I never heard of that book. And that book might've been from the 1980s, but that would be a fascinating book to read. Are there any books along the way that come to your mind right now? You're not going to think of all of them that, you know, really got your attention, that helped you think through things, or maybe it was in books, maybe it's something different.
No, I don't think it's so much books as it is experiences. As we talked earlier, I grew up in Detroit.
Yeah.
And I grew up in the city of Detroit. And so the neighborhood that I lived in was called a near Northwest ghetto by Time magazine, because six police officers shot to death end of our block one night. We lived the second house off the corner. And I've been sitting on the couch. I've had the window shot out next to my head. They didn't call them drive-by shootings in those days. And we even had a Molotov cocktail thrown through the front door once. And a lot of other issues. We lived right across the street from a gymnasium entrance. And there were a lot of issues that happened relative to that. And the experiences and how my dad reacted to that. So as I viewed those, I began to think about what was causing this. What were these sequence of events that led to people doing things that you would say, why in the world would anybody do that? And so I think it was more of those experiences of thinking through what motivates people. What are the reasons they're doing something that you would think would be unthinkable? And you come to the realization that you don't really know you don't really know what's in the background. There's those sayings that say, okay, well, walk a mile in a man's shoes before you judge them. And so then that gets to the point of judgment and being judgmental. And those elements and concepts, as I thought about them, are what developed my thinking about how to approach people. And this book is a book on leadership, and there's some aspects to leadership, one side of which I'm very good at, the other side which I have to be cognizant of all the time to be the best I can be. And so it's kind of along those lines.
When you go through those experiences and you know, you live in a rough neighborhood and things happen and you watch that play out, does it also like make you realize like when you get to where you want to go, like, you don't want your kids to be in that situation. Does that give you gratitude today of saying that, first of all, where you are, and then having the ability to want to help people and to actually help people along the way? Like, do you dial back because you went to that point just there, and I could see it when you're talking. That's not just something you say. That's real, right? That's something you lived. Does that allow you to be the best version of yourself today based on your experiences in the past?
Well, as long as we can put our experiences in context. It's not about, poor me, I was there and now I've dragged myself out of that. Because you're not out of it. That's still reality. That's reality for a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And so understanding that, and when it comes to my kids, saying, I want them to be aware of that and understand that that's going on and say to themselves, what can I do to help that situation as I go on my journey through life? And so it comes back to helping, again, people in that whole issue and then how to do that. Because obviously there's a need for help out there that's overwhelming. There's too much to do and not enough people to do it. So when we think back on those situations and how I feel about that, it allows me to put in perspective the understanding of that I may not understand what someone else is going through, and I need to figure that out if I'm going to be effective with them. It goes back to the book question, and the book I would mention is very unusual. It's a book called Black Like Me. It's a book written by an author who dyed his skin, changed his hairstyle, you know, et cetera, to live as a Black person in a variety of situations, to get a feeling for what that was like. And as I read that book and he talked about all these situations, of course, he ran into some things that, you know, that a lot of us don't necessarily experience or would want to experience in terms of prejudice or other kinds of things. But as I read it, I thought to myself, given the situation I also lived in, I said, you know, there's one thing about what he's writing that he can't duplicate for a person who's really in that situation. And that is he, in the back of his mind, however far in the subconscious, knows he can walk away from that.
Right.
When you're in a situation where you don't feel you can walk away from it, that's a whole different ballgame. And so I think that's, you know, that fuels my passion for wanting to understand people and help them, which I'm not always good at, but on the other hand,
I try. But that's what you're striving for. Yeah. Right. Well, and then you see that, you know what it's like to be over on this other side or have the, and you have enough experiences, whether it's yourself or watching other people and reading these books, that once you have this opportunity, what do you do with that opportunity? Here right. We are, we live in this, you know, there's always things going on, but we happen to live in this country. We have opportunity and you have people like yourself that are out there to say, I can help you with this. You have this passion, you have this why, you have this what, how are we going to get you to that next step? And I think about that a lot. You know, you think about my family came from Russia, you know, escaped from Russia. My grandfather didn't have a lot of money. His father left at a young age and he did amazing things with his life. But then imagine fast forward if he was alive today and in his prime of his career and had the tools and resources that we have today. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, you can't take it for granted, I guess. But at the same time, like you said, there's so much out there to help. Not everyone is given that opportunity, but if you do have the opportunity, what are you going to do with it and how are you going to do it? Which I'm guessing is a big reason of why you wrote this book, The Power of Respect in Business. Is that like, let me ask you this question, I guess, why write the book?
Well, it's actually, as I said earlier, a book on leadership. And what I've learned over time that leadership is an equal emphasis on results and relationships. So you can probably tell from this conversation, I'm an analytical person. So when somebody starts talking to me about an issue, in my mind, I'm like down the road, 20 miles. I've got this solved. I know where they're going, et cetera. And they're probably looking at me like, the dude's not listening to me.
Yeah.
And so how can I be effective leading that person? And so the results side of it, I can do in my sleep. I can figure that out 6 ways from Sunday. That is my talent. So I had to say to myself, how do I focus on the relationship side of things in order to be most effective as a leader and to help people ultimately? And that relationship side goes back to what I just talked about in terms of the roots of understanding where people are coming from. So what happens is to me is when I'm listening to somebody and I begin to not necessarily like what they're saying or don't agree with what they're saying, it's important for me to say, how do I pause in my mind long enough to be current, to be present for them yeah. in the conversation? And the word for me that came out was respect. So if somebody's talking to me and I'm sitting there starting to get frustrated or angry with what they're saying, if in the next nanosecond, which is not always,
right.
I can say, how can I respect this person? It causes me to pause just long enough. And there's some stories in the book that are interesting. There was a guy that I knew, John Casson, who is the most amazing person I've ever met relative to being able to relate with. But you could walk into a room of strangers who have all kinds of issues or agendas, and he can relate to every one of them somehow. And I remember talking to John one time. I said, John, you're so amazing at that. I said, you're a smart guy. I said, but I'm a smart guy. How come I can't be as good as you are? And this story is in the book. And he said, I'll give you two words, listen longer. And it, you know what that does, obviously, is it allows the person you're talking with understand that you are listening to them and not facetiously. And the second thing is, you may find that where they end up going is not where you just assumed and went down the road to solve in your mind. So you become more effective as a leader. You actually, you don't just engage them, you enable them, which is why the subtitle says enabling your team as opposed to just engaging. And that's a big difference.
Yeah. And we use the word respect. And, you know, obviously it's in the title of the book. And when you do respect that other person, when you respect the people that you work with, there is something there, but it has to, we use the word genuine a lot because there's a lot, you can be disingenuous, the opposite of it. And you go to a lot of large organizations, and I've worked for large organizations, and you would sit down at a dinner like you're talking about, and a leader would come up, someone who's high up in the organization, and you could just see right through it. It's nothing bother. I mean, there's things that bother me more. That's a big bother to me, and it's an annoyance, and it's like, nah, this isn't a real conversation. You're just kind of like checking the box that you've talked to all these different people.
Right.
And I don't care what level you're at. You could be brand new at the company. You could be a successful salesperson or a high executive or whatever, a middle manager, doesn't matter. Those people exist in large companies. And I think sometimes I have an issue with the word respect, not when the way you use it, but the way people think that they can use that word. They can just toss around these important words and it solves all their problems. And okay, because it just, it's so, I don't know if this is even a word, corporatized. And it's like, you read this stuff in marketing. We see it all the time. Like, you're trying to stand out, yet you're a small company and you're sounding like this large organization right now. Why are we doing that? Why are we using this stuff? But you know, this person sitting down has a way of engaging with somebody. And when you do that and it's genuine and it's real and it's all of that stuff, it just, it matters. It makes a big difference. And you can tell when someone like yourself sits down at this table across from me, I can just say, no, it's real. This is real. This is a real book. This is a real person with real stuff that wants to help people, that's lived life. But at the same time, and you've seen it, because I know you've been a part of large organizations, that this can be taken out of context, respect.
Well, it's interesting because one of the people I interviewed for the book runs a learning and organization in Chicago. And they focus on helping people respect themselves, et cetera. And when I first sat down to interview him for the book, he said, well, I'm going to take exception to what you're saying here. He says, you know, respect to me is an overused word. And people walk in the room like saying, expect, because I'm at a certain level, you need to respect me. And I said, well, I understand that. In fact, what I'm trying to do is flip the switch on that, because that's the wrong use of the word respect in the concept of respect. You're not going to engage or enable anybody by doing that. And then what happens? You walk in the room, everybody shuts up. So to me, you engage this respect, not just by what you say, but your actions. Any C-suite role that I've had in a manufacturing company that I've been part of running or running itself, I've worked the first shift in every station in those plants there. It's been hilarious at times.
Yeah.
People, you know, people tell me that they had all their recalls from the shift that I worked on, right. et cetera. But you also find out things about the skill of those people and what they're doing that you don't even think about. And they respect that. It's interesting. It goes with hand in hand with the communication of the word as a communication of the action, as I would call it. And it's interesting because, again, in the book, there's an example of a company that I was the CEO of. And when I came in, it was a union shop. Company needed to be turned around. And the UAW was the union entrenched in that organization. And nobody really communicated with anybody. It was a classic confrontation between management and the union relative to getting things done because of the way they approached it. And I came in and I said, okay, we're going to have communication sessions once a quarter involving all the people. We call them all company meetings, which I know other companies call it that. We bring them together. The first part of that meeting was an attempt to have our sales and marketing team communicate to the organization concepts of plans or targets or things they're doing to kind of give them an understanding of the cathedral we're building, in essence, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And then the last half of the meeting was to be open for any issues and concerns that people had. So we had our first meeting, and the second part of that meeting, I thought a riot was going to break out. People were yelling at each other, you don't do this. You know, they were pointing the management team, you don't do this, and you don't. And so I told everybody, I said, look, everybody here has a right to ask a question, and you have a right to get an answer. You may not always like that answer, but we have to talk about this in order to be able to get to the solution. And we're going to use the structure of the departments and HRs. And my office is always open, but you don't need to come up there all the time to expect you're going to get somebody to treat you correctly. And then afterwards, we're walking away, and the management team that I had then inherited said, oh, we better not have another one of these. And we were yelling at each other. I said, no, that's exactly why we need to have these things. And it's simple things that come out that people say. And you can do things to satisfy their issue or complaint that are simple in form, but huge in terms of how it affects the organization.
That's absolutely right. I say that because we just had a recent meeting here, it wasn't a meeting, it was a conversation. And the conversation it's about communication. Who's communicating with you? How is this stuff getting done? You're building this sense of entitlement, this ego in your head, because you think this person should be doing something and they're building on their side because no one's communicating about it. And we're a communications company. And the thing I look for in people that we bring on board is that they are able to communicate. Now, I get it. There's different things when you have to say something out loud to somebody else. That's hard to do. I understand that. So we have to break through those barriers, and it takes times and it takes experience and doing work with one another. That is, like you said, this is a problem. We're having all these battles, these conversations. No, we have to air this stuff out. We have to get to that next point. You also use the word, you've used it a couple of times now, engaging and enabling. And we see that, you know, this day and age, social media, let's say. People are on social media and they're just talking from a mountaintop. There's no engaging going. There is engaging going on. But there's this belief that you can just talk and that's engaging people. It's not engaging people. Engaging somebody is enabling them to have a conversation with you, a back and forth. What's their opinion? What's my opinion? Let's have a conversation. Let's talk and let's take that offline and go somewhere else and have a cup of coffee or have a beer, whatever that might be. And so you're using these words. And again, all of these words can be buzzwords, but if done like with genuine behavior, they're in very important words.
Well, that's the distinction between the what. The words are the what.
Right.
The how, and in fact, the next book that I intend to write is called How Matters. Because a lot of times people can even agree on the what, but how matters.
Yeah.
And I think that's also missing in terms of what people need to keep in mind in terms of the next step in growing your organization or yourself or whatever, the relationships essentially that you have.
It does. Well, that's a big reason why I love podcasts, this type of podcast, this format. We can do surface stuff. Like I can have you in here. We can talk 10 minutes and hit the high points. And that's important. That's fine. I like getting into the depth of it. I don't think in a normal conversation, if we didn't have that much time together, I don't learn about your background in Detroit and how you got to where you are today. Not necessarily all the things along the way, but there's these little stories, these little snippets along the way that help paint that picture. And I think a communication and engaging and enabling you to have a microphone in front of you to talk, to share your story, I think is super important because it gets into that how. And then you dive into the book, right? So you get to the power, respect, and business. And you had a story in there that talked about riding your bike with your mouth open.
Don't ride your bike with your mouth open.
Don't ride your bike yet. Don't ride, of course, don't ride your bike with your mouth open. Tell us a little bit about that story in the book.
Well, it's essentially a metaphor for listening. It occurred to me just when I was riding my bike. And
yeah.
The description of riding your bike along in the open, except in entering an area that may be wooded, is exactly what happened when we ever rode around the lake in Libertyville, Illinois, which is where I lived outside of Chicago. And so whenever we went into that area, it was darker and there was bugs flying around, and you got to thinking about the fact that, you know, sometimes it wanted to get in your eye or whatever, but the whole issue of, I would automatically try to close my mouth walking through, and it occurred to me that that's a metaphor for listening as well. Because if you ride your bike with your mouth open, you're going to catch a bunch of bugs and you're not going to be as effective as getting through that area, which may be dark or clouded or unknown to you as you're going through it, because you're really not paying attention to what's going on around you.
So are you using, so you go in, I guess let's talk a little bit about when you help other businesses out. I mean, this is the book. I might be interested, someone might be interested, they come in, you come in there and use these types of stories to help them out. What type of companies are you working with, or type of leaders are you working with?
Well, you know, in terms of our ideal client type of format or picture of a client, we like to talk to CFOs and CEOs because they're the decision makers.
Yep.
But on the psychographic side of that, it's important to understand we want to talk to companies that know and understand that they need help and want help. Yeah, because if they don't, I'm wasting my time, I'm wasting their time, quite frankly. Yep. And not only that, if they don't believe they need help, if they do need help but don't believe it, then nothing's going to be effective in terms of these examples in the book of how, because they can't get to the how in that regard.
And how are you reaching? So there's different ways. Obviously, you have a long track record of success in working with, you know, C-suite as a C-suite executive and different companies. You've made relationships along the way. Is it the planting of the seeds along the way and you've made all these different relationships and now they're calling on you? Is it a combination of that? Is it a combination of using current day marketing methods to get in front of people, networking, getting out there, being on podcasts? Like how are you today getting conversations and opportunities with new clients?
Well, it's networking, which is a relationship business, which is really what business is.
Right.
And as many people know, if you're in the job and you got your head down and you work as hard as you can, you don't actually do the networking you should and develop the relationships outside of that little office that you should. So I would encourage people to do that, to pay attention to their relationships outside of the specific business that they're in, and develop that network. So then what happens is I call on that network to get other introductions. And they know me, so they make a warm introduction, which is better. I mean, cold calling really doesn't work so much as people might think. I'm not trying to sell, you know, this widget that you need for your particular business. I'm trying to sell you some consulting and some advising that you may need. And if you believe you need it, I can be effective in that. So the point is that it's networking, pure and simple. Relationships take 3 to 4 years at least to build into something that might turn into a gig that pays in terms of consulting. But that's not the point. The point is that relationship along the way. The more people that know me, know where I came from and why I do what I do, can also be the ones that can help understand how can I help somebody else, either them or someone else.
Are you amazed with the changing in the landscape of networking? Because I agree that it's all about networking and making relationships with different people. The tools and the resources and the things, those have changed and they will change again, right? So somebody's like, oh, it's social media. Well, it might be. That's just a tool. So people say, oh, I need to be on Facebook or I need to be on Instagram. And that's all great. Don't get lost in the fact that those are just the tools that exist right now. While we're talking, Instagram might be going out of business. I have no idea. Nobody knows. It's a tool. And if it's working, take advantage of it. So at the same time, you've been in business. You've seen different things. Are you amazed with the changing in the landscape in networking, marketing, and all that? Or do you see that it's just this common thread and just, yeah, there's some tools along the way and different ways? You know, I remember my grandfather used to talk about when he joined a country club, and he's from in Niagara Falls, New York, to get to the city of Buffalo go to the country club he wanted to get to, the highway wasn't built. So it took all this time to get there. But he realized in order to be in front of these people and have conversations, he needed to join and be there. Mm-hmm. Now today, it wouldn't take him that long. But that was the tool. So then you wait 20 years, the highway's built, it's much faster to get there. So that's a tool, that's a resource, that's a way to get to somewhere. But now you come today and it's like, wow, you can be on LinkedIn and you can be messaging with C-suite executives all day long if you know how to do it, if you know how to engage them, not say, hey, I'm here to sell you a widget, right? We're over the spam. The spam doesn't work. You know, people maybe it must work at some level because people continue to do it. My cell phone rings every day with a new spam caller. But anyway, just talking about a little bit about marketing today versus the past.
Well, I think, you know, certain things have changed. I mean, the speed at which information flows and data can flow is incredible. I think you hit the nail on the head when you say you call it tools, then that's just what they are. They're tools. They're tools as much for exposure as it is as tools for selling. In other words, I learned long ago relative to the consulting side, I think consulting is bought, not sold. If I sit down with you as a potential client, if I don't sit there and listen to you talk about what your needs are or what your frustrations are or what keeps you up at night kind of thing, to determine hearing that for some period of time, how maybe what I can do can help and then talk about it or not it doesn't make sense to do it any other way.
Yeah.
So to say, okay, I'm on LinkedIn and we have a business page on LinkedIn, we have a website and all this, that doesn't mean that somebody knows that we're there or knows that we can help. The introduction of the networking and person-to-person relationships means that now somebody has a source to go back and see what exposure is out there for me. it's sort of like a background check, if you will, in terms of those tools. And so you need to be relevant in the relevant tools at the time, and they will change, but recognize it as not a selling tool, but as an exposure tool. And it supports and communicates who you are and how you think. And it's not just, okay, here's a picture, so, okay, I'm going to go buy that picture. It's not that cut and dried.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything for you. And that's the thing, too, is like if I were to talk to you and say we're reaching out to you to try to, hey, let's learn about your business and maybe we have software for you. I don't know what it is. But we reach out if we have these conversations and we can, oh, you're from Detroit. Okay, so, well, did you grow up a sports fan? And I think we talked earlier and you said you're a big Red Wings fan. Well, let's talk. Genuinely, of course, you know, I could be disingenuous, but I think someone like yourself would catch on to that at some point. Like, I really don't like this guy. I don't trust him. You know, there's something there that I'm not sure about. And you just like, we're going to let that one go. But if there's like real conversations. We talk about the Detroit Red Wings. We talk about growing up in Detroit. We talk about your bit. It's all there. You know, someone could research me. He's from Buffalo. He's a big Ohio State fan. He loves podcasting. He loves marketing. He loves this. He's whatever those types of things are. His son plays soccer. I mean, there's articles about this stuff. You can have real conversations with people. It's like you said, that's the background check. And what you do with it and how genuine you want to be with it is super important. And then then if someone reaches out, is there that back and forth? Is that their true engagement? And did you catch me at the right time? I mean, so timing means a lot as well. Getting into the whole, we just talked a little bit about sports. When you first came in here, we were talking about you're a soccer coach. So you're doing a lot of different things. You're coaching your children playing soccer at Charlotte Soccer Academy. Your daughter played soccer very high up in U.S. soccer. Talk to me about your experiences with sports. I believe even you said that you played rugby back in the day, which is a no joke sport, you know?
No, that was sometime last century, but yeah. Doing sports allows people to experience hard work and teamwork and what that means. Experiencing what it means to lose and lose together and win together kind of things. Those are life experiences. And that's really what's going to happen to them as they go through life. People sometimes try to go through life as individuals, but you can't. I mean, you're not going to be as successful or as happy if you go through life as an individual versus recognizing you're part of the team of the human race. And so it's important that I think those concepts get communicated. The next thing is the relativity of those situations and experiences, helping people in their relationships between the kid and the parents relative to these sporting events. Because again, everybody hears about the contracts that are broadcast on TV and they think, well, that's where my kid is going. And the reality is that's not the case. That doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's not the case. And therefore, we have to understand other aspects of the relationship between the child and the parent. Parents should be advocates for their children. I've never had a problem with that. You know, they're going to yell out to their kids and all that sort of thing. But again, that has to be an advocacy versus trying to correct them on doing something wrong. What I tell parents when I first take over a soccer team, I said, you know, we're not going to be using any criticism of people. So if somebody's dribbling, we're not going to say, why did you do that? Or that's wrong. Because what's going to happen the next time that person's out on the field engaged with another player and they're starting to go into the same situation, what's going to happen? If I always told them that's wrong, they're going to start thinking, whoa, I got to think of what's wrong here. Or they may, worst case, turn around and look at me for direction. And they're not going to be successful at what they're doing. And so it's important to say, okay, you know, that's important. If somebody does something well, talk about the thing that was done well by the person that did it well.
Yeah.
To encourage them to do something better. If they make a bad pass, we say, let's make a better pass, as opposed to that pass was terrible.
Right.
And things like that. It's interesting. I coached a team that nobody else wanted to coach in Libertyville at the lowest level of their travel league. And so Libertyville had a lot of different higher level teams. So this was actually, if you think of ABC, this was the D team. There's enough kids to play. And everybody said, well, we don't have any more room on these other teams. And I said, well, I'll coach these kids. And we played against other teams in other cities there. So Elk Grove Village was another city, very much smaller than Libertyville, had essentially only one team. Didn't want to travel all around the region, so they played at the lower level with this team, but their kids on average was the best of their town. We played them in a game and we lost 11-0. All the parents were all upset. One assistant coaches came over to them and started berating the kids. And I wanted to throw them in a trash can, but I told them to leave. And I said, one of the kids, I said, how do you feel? And they said, well, we feel bad. I said, well, why do you feel bad? Well, because we lost so badly. And I said, well, did you see things out there that you want to try to do? did you learn something from what the other team was doing? You said, I want to be able to do that. And they said, yeah. So we begin to construct the lesson, if you will, on how do we get better and what does that mean? Not that we're bad people, because their team, shall we, should be playing in the B or A division for that matter. We played them again at the end of the year and lost 3-0. That is progress. And by the way, the parents were all upset at that 11-0 game. And I talked to them on the side and said, look, and these, by the way, were 8-year-old kids. And I said, look, you know, when somebody's 8 or 9 years old, you can't tell me how they're going to play soccer when they're 16 or 15, when it might make a difference if that's the big deal for them. So I said, they're going to develop. And like I say, you know, when you progress to losing 3-0 to the same team, we've made progress. And so those are the kinds of things that I think people should get out of the sports and need to get out of the sports. It depends on the coaches. It depends on the parent group, you know, because obviously there's always somebody. On Carly's team that played at the national level, that parent group was fabulous. There was no, you know, egos on the parent side relative to the kids. And so we just had a hell of a great time.
Yeah,
we were winning. Does that make us happy? Certainly. But on the other hand, it was more of a relationship than it was a competition. And I think that's important.
Well, you see it in any level of sport, right? You see these different teams that have these organizations where it's from the coach, it's to the players, it's to the parents, it's to the organization, it's just to anyone that's showing up watching these. You know, I've seen it with my son playing sports, and I've seen teams where, like, if someone makes a mistake, goodness, don't make a mistake, because they are calling you out from the coach to the players to the parents, and everyone's talking. You're like, holy cow, these are like kids, you know, and from different ages, from 9 to 15 years old. And you're like, what is going on out here? And then you go to another one, if someone makes a mistake, they're like, don't worry about it, that was my fault, I should have done this, you're good. Like, and it's interesting, but you see it start the leadership at the top. And I saw that at the end of the game where the coach made everybody on their own team, this was a common thing they did every single game. They shook their hands, each other. Good job, go congratulate them. Go say something nice about somebody else on the team. It's not all like, you know, rainbows and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's important to have that culture on that team. And, you know, we can sit here and talk about the how and the book and all these things, but I think you mentioned it before. It's a book about leadership. You're about leadership. And there's so many different things that go on there. It's about communicating. It's about enabling and engaging. And, you know, and that ties itself back into playing sports. You've seen it at different levels, whether it's the 8-year-old team or your daughter playing on a super high level U.S. soccer team, or in business, right? And you can be in business for 30 years and doing this stuff. And so one other thing I want to touch on, because you've talked with Shane Snively, he's my business partner here, and we call him the strategy addict. You come in here and I read your profile, read the book, look at different things, and I see the word strategy come out a lot. And strategy's fun. You see strategy in sports, right? Like, how are we going to go after this? How are we going to attack this team? How are we going to do these different things? Or what's our overall strategy for the team? He gets on the whiteboard and it's like the beautiful mind. The strategy comes out and it's a lot of fun. And what is it about strategy? Like, that word, again, buzzword, but a super important word. Like, what is it about strategy that just gets someone like you and even me, or Shane to another degree, like, just so excited? And why are some people able to just see and get to strategy? And some people, like, you know, aren't the strategic leaders. They're something else, which is okay.
Right. I don't necessarily know, you know, how people end up being strategic versus not strategic. I mean, again, like I say, I'm analytic. Some other people are not analytical. So some of that comes from we can blame our parents for some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think the reason strategy is so important and such a big deal is it sets the direction. It's a direction. When you're leading an organization or a group of people, direction is important. Now, again, how that direction is put together is very important. And that's where it comes back to engaging your team and enabling your team to participate in that. So it's the what in the target strategy. It sets a direction. So it is extremely important. If you don't have a what, you obviously can't ultimately have a how.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is it's something that gives people a sense of purpose of why they're headed in that direction. Not the emotional why that we talked about before, but why are we doing this down the road into this direction? And so it's important that be determined for an organization so that people have a filter, if you will, to measure how what they do affects the ability for this organization to move in that direction.
It's complicated a lot of times where you have the strategy. You as the business leader, you know what it is.
Right.
You've lived it. I mean, you've built this thing. You're up in the middle of the night. You're working on all this stuff. Like, you can talk about it, passionate, get excited, bang on the table, all that stuff. someone comes into the organization and they get it. They get it to a degree. And then they get working and things get going. And it's like they get off kilter a little bit and they're really not seeing that strategy in front of them. What are the different ways to make sure the people on the team who don't live it as much as you do, it's not their baby and that's okay. And they shouldn't have to, they don't have the same stake in it. How do the over time do you think is the best way? And maybe not just one way to get them to see the strategy, understand, is it just over communicating? Is it constant conversations, open door? Like what have you seen that works best?
Well, I think you have to make the strategy relate to what they do or what you're expecting them to do. So it's a different level of strategy. You know, what's the, somebody may say that's actually more technical or more tactical.
Yeah.
But how does the person who's loading glass fill on the front of the line, if you went and said, oh, we want to do this because these markets and global this and trend that, they're going to go, can I just go back to my break or get back to the line?
Yeah.
And so you have to be able to help them understand how what they do is affected by or affects that strategy. So you got to set the strategy, but then you got to break it down. So the level that you break it down, which is important. The other dimension of this in my mind is a lesson that I was taught by another guy that I worked for, president at Blythe North American Wholesale Group. He was telling me one day, he says, Charlie, you know, and he was a sales and marketing guy. He says, I could bring the marketing people in here and I could sit there and I could go up on the board and I could draw out the strategy. I could tell them all what they should be doing and all this detail. And he says, or I can have them in the room and ask them questions and try to talk through them with them for 3-4 hours. He says, Charlie, always take the 4 hours, because that way, you know, they're getting to understand what it is that they're putting together. They're getting to understand as best they can how what they do in their individual parts of that affect that. And then they also feel important, which they are. They feel enabled to be able to say, I can articulate what I do, I can articulate the strategy, and I know how to help execute it.
Because they spent the time?
Because they spent the time talking about and talking through the pros and cons of the ideas that built that strategy.
Yeah. What about the thought that if you have a meeting, it's like, oh, wow, we're going to sit in here for all this time to think about that meeting. So it has to be an engaging conversation.
It has to be.
So if it's a lecture style, you're going to lose it.
Yeah. If his ability to tell them everything they needed to know in 20 minutes was just expanded that to 4 hours and he was still telling them everything they needed to know,
yeah,
that would be even worse than the 20 minutes.
Right.
Some people will take to the 20. I just need to know what I need to do and I'll go do it.
Right.
And so you do have to understand as a leader, what's the individual implications of leadership of respect and how do you execute that? Because it's not the same for everybody.
Right.
I mean, we're all humans. So we're all different.
It's all different.
And back to your point about, well, you know, some people, the strategy has been set. Some people, why are they here for this job? Not in a great detail, but why are they here for this job? That job's a need for them to do something else. So they may say, well, I just want to run this punch press machine. I don't care about anything else. I don't want to know about anything else because I want to go home and do whatever it is that they want to do.
Yeah.
And so that person gets engaged and enabled on a different level. And you can't force that to be any different. There's going to be some people on fire about what to do. But what I always say about people on fire is think about a flame. The moth is attracted to the flame, but some people don't want to get burned by that flame either. So yeah. They don't want to be that close to it.
Yeah.
So you got to, again, understand the dynamic and dimension of that. Who is on fire in your organization? How to use them in the right way so they're not running over people?
Yeah.
And you got to get on the same side of the table, as people say, with the people you're trying to lead. And I'll go back to another example with the union and the UAW. When I first came there as the CEO of that company, the leadership committee of the union wanted to meet with the CEO, which is not protocol in a union environment. And I said, well, you need to meet with manufacturing and HR, director of operations and HR, who reported to me first. But they kept asking. So I went to my director of operations and HR. I said, what do you guys think? And he said, well, go ahead and meet with them one time, see what happens. So I get in the conference room and the three of them come in and sit down across from me. And they said, we have one question for you. And I said, what's that? They said, what do you think of unions? And I looked at them. I said, I don't. We're here. Our goal here is to create sustainable jobs in Rockford, Illinois. To do that, we have to be productive. To do that, we have to be profitable. And to do that, we have to be flexible. And I want to get flexibility on the table right away, because that is the issue. Once you have this going on in your organization, you got to break that by talking about flexibility. And I said, you know, there's 200 people on the floor. And I looked out the window from the conference. I look out there and I said, I don't see union or non-union workers. I see people who need a job. And I looked at them in all honesty and I said, I don't know about you, but I need this job. And so now, if they were going to say, we don't need this job, then I know what to do about that.
Right.
That's a whole different, but that's not the case. Now we're in the same boat, essentially. And we're beginning to build the trust that goes with that. And I let me just say one thing about trust real quickly, because I know that's a buzzword that's all over the place. The T in respect to me is trust. It's one of the components of respect. And respect is a broader term, the way I look at it anyway. And trust is extremely important. But in order, you know, it's chicken or egg. Does trust come before respect or respect for trust? I happen to think respect is a leader into trust. It may work the other way for some people, but
sure,
that's how I look at them.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like we were talking about before. If you're going to have a conversation with somebody, it's that genuine behavior. And if there is, and I trust that you're being genuine right now, that comes out, right? I can feel it. Like, no, I can see you're trying to get one over on me right now. And you're immediately going to the sale, or I can sense it because I've been around long enough to know that this is where that's heading. And you mentioned too, as well, like getting to that flame, the moth of the flame, is some people do like to get close. Then there's people who want to stay away under the radar. There's nothing like, they both can work. The thing that doesn't work is in an organization when there's hiding. And I think for a while that was very easy to hide. And I think things are being built differently. Compensation's being, it depends on the industry and the company that you're talking about. It's harder to hide. There's accountability is a big one, right? So we need to have accountability. But that hiding thing is something that scares a lot of people because I don't want to micromanage. I don't want to say, well, what'd you do today? And how'd you do it? And exactly that, you know, but there's tools and processes, and this is the process that we have. And here's how you do the, here's how you handle the process and all that. Because if not, there's hiding that goes on. But there's trust. So if I trust you to do the work, I don't have to ask if you were doing the work. I trust that you were doing the work, right?
And I trust that you'll tell me when you need help doing the work. But then you also have to have communicated that you are willing and able to help them if they come to you for help.
Right.
It's the age-old thing. You know, if I said, come on over here, come on around the corner. And as soon as you come around the corner, I punch you in the face. Right. The next time I ask you to come around the corner, are you going to come around the corner?
No. Never again. Yeah. Stay away from that guy.
Yeah. So the punching in the face, people don't realize when we don't always realize when we punch somebody in the face,
right,
quote unquote. And it's important to, and we will make those mistakes.
Sure.
Regardless of how much we're trying to concentrate on. And then the question is, then what do you do about making a mistake? Well, I made a mistake and here's what I'm going to do. You know, it's a new day and I start over again. And you try to do the best you can.
Well, Charles, what's the best way? The Power of Respect in Business. I want to buy the book. Amazon.
Amazon's probably the best way. It's on Barnes & Noble. It's on a lot of other lesser-known websites, but I think Amazon would be the best way to go.
Yeah, people love Amazon. So what? And what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me would be if you could visit the site expertsinhow.com. My contact information is on there or on LinkedIn as well as a profile. And feel free to reach out to me. Any questions on this, I'd love to have a discussion with people who want to know more about what I'm saying in the book and how they could do that in their organization.
Yeah, no, I think it's fascinating. Like we talked about at the beginning, the why, the what, it's talked about a lot. And I think when you really dive into it, how can be a lot of fun when you go through it. And it's like we talked about, a lot of strategy, a lot of thinking. People like you out there, it's important. So we appreciate the time that you spent with us, the stories, getting back to your early days in Detroit and now here in Charlotte. So appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity.
One of the best things about CastSource is having the content platform that gives us the opportunity to chat with amazing people like Charles likewise, and then having the ability to bring that content to you through our podcast platform. If you want to learn more about Charles, you can find him on LinkedIn. If you want to connect with me, you can find me on LinkedIn or contact me on Twitter at Eric_Cas. Thank you for listening to our CastSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. Until next time, we're out of here. This episode is brought to you by the CastSource brand Podcast. Podcast is your podcast production team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story through audio? That's what we do. Podcast strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at Podcast, we exist to help you create and share amazing content through podcasts. Learn more by visiting podcast.com.